And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Welcome to the NBA Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show.
Ding, ding.
How about we can just watch basketball?
I like that idea.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. This is the Daily Ding. It's your Eurobasket Final Eight update. I'm Dave DeFour, joined by my good friend Christian Pelletier, the voice of EuroLeague, Eurobasket. Basically, if you're in Finland and you're watching basketball, Christian Pelletier is probably talking to you. What's up, buddy?
I appreciate the intro. That was pretty accurate as well. So I'm good. And it's a pleasure to be joining you here, and obviously the Daily Ding is one of the podcasts that's automatically in the playlist every morning. So
yeah, well, it's been a while since you and I have had a chance to catch up, and sure. It's funny because it's been a few years since we've spoken on a podcast, at least.
Yeah.
And in the last few years, there's been a shift in the NBA where you have like three of the top five, you could say four of the top six, maybe, players in the league that are Euros, international players. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, Luka, Giannis, Jokic, Embiid. I mean, this is a massive shift, and it's one that you actually saw coming a few years ago when we were talking. Of course, we thought Lauri Markkanen might be one of those guys, maybe, but how is that as a you know, a guy who coaches there, you cover the league there, and you cover the NBA. Like, what has it been like to watch that process?
Obviously, this is because of the people that made it possible. The stars of you know, yesteryear, whether it was, you know, Tony Parker, Pau Gasol, Dirk Nowitzki, 15 to 20 years ago, when they came up, those were the golden breed or the golden generation of Europe, but these guys have taken it to another level. And obviously, Dirk and Pau and Parker existed because of Petrovic and Nikos Galis and Marcelonis and Sabonis and guys like that. But it's pretty incredible that all these guys have shown up and reached this level so close to one another in terms of, the past few years, they've all of a sudden made this jump. It's a testament to how Europeans have caught up in terms of understanding the game in the past 30 years, getting it more and more popular, and then also understanding the fact that their player development system in many cases is probably superior to the US in terms that they don't rush their guys as much, especially the big guys. I would still argue that the US does a better job of developing their guards than Europe does. And that's why a lot of the Eurobasket teams have decided to bring an American to, why don't you become a Croatian and here's a passport, come play. But in terms of the other positions, especially the big positions, kind of positions 4 or 5, Europe has done a really good job in terms of player development and not rushing these guys where AAU, it's you need instant gratification, instant success, and it's more important for the team to win than to develop guys. Obviously, that's a really rough or a broad kind of a categorization of AAU basketball. There are good programs as well, but the ones that are sponsored by Nike and Adidas and stuff like that, it's usually not the case, unfortunately. And big guys develop later, and thankfully Europeans understand that. But at the same time, there's not like one team that you feel like, hey, that's a real threat to the US the way the Spanish team was the first 10 years of the 21st century. So I guess you could also say that the US has done its job in terms of player development and creating a lot of really good players, but this is kind of unprecedented.
Well, the U.S. is, I mean, it's a huge country, so there's a bit of a built-in advantage there. And I will say, it's a good point that you're making. The talent in Europe is spread out throughout Europe, and I think it's one of the reasons why this Eurobasket has been so compelling. I mean, there's so many NBA players, but also there's a lot of guys that probably could have played in the NBA that just haven't come over. And I want to jump right into the tournament, because if you'd watch group play like I did, you probably thought, even though they were in a bit of a cupcake group, that Serbia was the best team at Eurobasket. They looked fantastic in group play, and then they get upset by Italy. What in the hell happened there?
Looking back, World Cup qualifiers, which you know were played during the summer. One window was with a lot of NBA players already in June, and then the second window right before this Eurobasket tournament. And Serbia already last summer kind of showed their flaws when they lost to Italy in the Olympic qualifiers in Belgrade in the final. And, you know, they lost to Belgium twice in the World Cup qualifiers. All right, Jokic wasn't there. I mean, I get it. But to me, Serbia has still one really big issue, and that's perimeter defense. And Italy is built to punish a team like that. To me, I still had Serbia to win the game slightly, but I could see 4 out of 10 scenarios where Italy would win, and they had a good game. They were able to spread the floor. I didn't imagine that Jokic would play under 30 minutes. Svetislav Pešić is one of the most legendary coaches on the planet. I don't want to, you know, say anything too bad about him, but in terms of maximizing what Jokic brings to the floor and how he can help his team win, that was probably not the ideal game plan to play him so little. But Italy is a tough matchup for Serbia. I'm not saying Italy is perfect, because now they meet France, who have terrific perimeter defenders. I don't know if France can score. That's another problem we'll get to in a second. But if there was one team that was probably a really big issue for Serbia, even with less talent, it was Italy. But to me, the best two teams have been Greece, even though they were horrible against the Czech Republic, and Germany, even though I don't understand how Montenegro got into that game with a 2-3 zone. But to me, those have been the two best teams, even though Slovenia did beat Germany. And then kind of the tier two teams have been Slovenia and Serbia. But Serbia got upset by Italy, and the tournament goes on.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, I guess let's move on to Lauri Markkanen, who has had a fantastic Eurobasket, man. I mean, he had a 43-point game. This is something that you and I have talked about a little bit previously with regards to his game. It's not necessarily suited for the NBA, because you can't just put the ball in his hands there. He doesn't have the talent for that level. But it is nice to know that maybe he could be a tertiary or even a third option with the ball in his hands to a greater degree than what we've seen out of him. I mean, do you think that there's some carryover here for him leaving this Eurobasket with some what should be, you know, high level of confidence, and going into next season into a tanking situation in Utah? He's going to have opportunities. You think he might find a chance to really kind of right his career and straighten the ship out?
I hope NBA teams realize that having a really ball dominant point guard, or a, you know, first 4 years he was with Zach LaVine in an organization that was rebuilding, had three coaches in those 4 years, and LaVine, who's become a much better passer, is still not the guy to set up his teammates. Other than, you know, once he's created an advantage, it's not like he's going to put the ball into a position where, hey, you go. You have a slight advantage with a flare screen or something like that, that he can kind of see those situations play out. He's a player that's going to beat his own guy and then try to make the right play. Darius Garland, a absolutely one of my favorite players in the league. Really, really high level point guard and fantastic at passing into the interior off his drives, whether it's a lob, whether it's a drop pass or whatever. He's really good at that. He's not the best passer on the perimeter or passing out off of a drive. If Markkanen is a, or Markkanen, I should pronounce him correctly, if he's in a situation where he's not with a ball dominant point guard, and I'm thinking kind of Boston is built that way, Golden State might be difficult because you need to make such quick decisions off on the ball and off the ball. That would probably take a while for him to kind of adjust to that. Toronto is kind of trying to reinvent basketball in a lot of ways. I think there are situations like that where he could be really, really valuable on a high level team, actually. And but he needs to kind of find his spots and he needs to be utilized correctly what Finland is doing. But on the other hand, there are so many good high level heliocentric guards in the NBA that is it worth changing that to bring a guy who on a high level kind of conference finals level team, he could maybe be the second option, but more likely the third option. I don't know, but I hope some NBA team with the correct kind of outlook says that, hey, maybe we could use something like that and hopefully bring him over for, you know, a first round pick or something. And just so we're clear, I hope he doesn't finish the season in Utah because they're tanking. He's 25. He's already been in a rebuilding position. Let's not do this again.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other NBA guys. I mean, we've watched Luka do ridiculous stuff. I mean, that shot that he hit over Gobert, I mean, multiple shots, but that one floater, he's running down the left baseline. Giannis has been incredible. So who do you think has been the best player in the tournament so far?
So I think there are three options. We've named all three of them. So Luka, Giannis, and Markkanen. And to me, Markkanen had the best round of 16 game, no question. He had a fantastic group stage as well, excluding maybe the game against Serbia. But to me, Luka has defeated the toughest opponents because he played in Group B. So he defeated his Slovenian team, defeated Germany. They beat Lithuania. And obviously, they beat France. And Luka was actually really bad in those first three games. But the second two games in that really difficult group and getting Slovenia to first place in that Group B, I think that has to weigh in Luka's advantage a little bit. So to me, right now, the order would be Luka, Markkanen, Giannis. And Giannis, partially because he did not have a good game against the Czech Republic, he really struggled against their the triple walling that they tried to do against him, which was looked a little silly on occasion. Finally, at the end, he did hit two threes and he made better reads off of the early pass situations, and he fed his teammates a little earlier. So that was good. But to me, he did not have nearly the impact on the game that Markkanen had against Croatia. So that's why I have him second. But, you know, it's a small sample size. It's six games so far. So one good game from Giannis and a lesser game from Markkanen against Spain. So those are the top three guys anyway.
So we're down to the final eight. Who's the best remaining team? And not necessarily who's going to win, but who is the best remaining team? Who should win?
I think the two best teams actually are going to face each other. Even though I wasn't impressed with how Greece and Germany played in the round of 16, I think those two teams are the best at Eurobasket. And I think even in the NBA this past season in conference finals and finals matchups, the teams that actually go the furthest in a tournament setting are the teams that defend the best. And to me, those are the two best defensive teams in the competition. Spain is kind of my sleeper because they, on paper, this is their worst roster they've had since, I don't know, 2004, maybe 2002. But I'd be shocked if they went all the way. To me, the two best teams are Greece and Germany, and probably after that are Slovenia are the most likely candidate to win, but Italy and France have a chance as well. But to me, Italy does have some holes in their game. Melli is a good defender against a guy like Jokic. Still, Jokic does what he does. But against Rudy Gobert being kind of a role defender, that's not probably his thing. When you get Italy playing in a half-court setting and really guard the perimeter well, I don't think they have enough weapons to go all the way. They may beat France. I don't see them beating Slovenia. I don't see them beating Greece.
So Slovenia's going to win, is what you're saying.
It's very possible. I'd still go with... I picked Greece before the tournament. I'd beat them beating Germany in the final, but Germany ended up second in the group after barely losing to Slovenia. So now they face in the quarterfinals. I'd go with Greece. Slovenia would be kind of my second pick or finals pick to go against them at this point.
Well, the quarterfinals kick off on Tuesday, the 13th of September. So if you're listening to this, the games might be live right now. Go and check them out. Christian Pelletier, thank you very much for coming on and breaking down what's left of Eurobasket. And hopefully we can find some more excuses to talk European basketball and I can get back to my roots.
Let's do it. Thank you so much, Dave.
For Christian, I'm Dave DeFore. Thanks for listening to The Daily Ding on the Athletic NBA Show.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.